Good evening. I would like to call the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is now 6:07 p.m. on Monday, May 16th. We are in Gruenberg Room in the State Capitol here in Juneau. Present, we have Representative Tarr, Representative Klayman, Representative Story, myself, Chair Tuck. We also, well, let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to do business. Please mute your phones. And we also have Talia Ames with the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting, and Robin Stevens with House Records for documenting today's meeting. So thank you. We have two items on the agenda today. The first one is House Joint Resolution 32, which is sponsored by Representative Nelson. After that, House Bill 97, sponsored by the governor. We're going to take first House Bill 97, since we don't have the bill sponsor with us in the room right now. And so I'd like to invite Brian Flechter up to whatever bench do we want to call that. He's a deputy commissioner of the Alaska Department of Revenue. He's here to give us an update on what this bill does and to answer any questions that we may have. So you want to just go ahead and just remind us what our hopes and dreams are for this one.
Okay. I am Brian Flechter, deputy commissioner for the Department of Revenue. The bill, in short, would establish a program similar to Pick-Click-Give, where electronic PFD applicants can elect to receive a land voucher in lieu of a cash PFD. That land voucher would be in the amount of twice the statutory PFD. So if the appropriated PFD is 1,000 and the statutory is, let's say, 3,000, your land voucher would be worth 6,000. And that's very briefly what the bill does. I know we have a presentation that's a bit of a repeat, or I can just be available here for questions.
Okay. Is there any desire to go through the presentation? Any reminders? Any questions? Yes, Representative Story. And let the record reflect that we've been joined with Representative Nelson and Representative Shaw. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Tuck, and welcome. Good to have you here. I know last time we were really concerned about the lands that were available, and you could help me because, of course, if we're going to be offering this up, we want to make sure that it is a valuable land that has access to like water and sewer. And we know some of them are very remote, but I was trying to think, how does a person find out what services are available? And if you could remind me, and maybe there is a map in your presentation about where all these things are, but we are very concerned about services available to these state lands.
Through the chair, I think, do we have a DNR online for that question?
Hang on here 1 second. We have Christy Cowles, I believe, Coles from Division of Mining, Land, and Water. We do not have anyone from DNR with us right now. We got, we do not, unfortunately.
Chair Tuck, this is Christy Collis. I'm with the Division of Mining, Land and Water, Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
So I could answer that question.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. If you will, you heard the question?
Yes, Chair Tuck.
Okay.
For the record, this is Christy Collis. I am the Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land and Water, Department of Natural Resources. And through the chair, Representative Story, so we have a variety of lands available, state lands that could be used as a PSD. Those lands do not have services in the sense of sewer. They are mainly lands, they are subdivision lands. They would have access sometimes by road, and those are surveyed parcels. Sometimes there is the ability to put in utilities, but a lot of these lands don't have utilities installed. It depends on if they're within a municipality or a borough. But we also have remote recreational cabin staking lands, where those are not going to be surveyed parcels. Those parcels would probably not have services, but this would be a choice somebody would make when they go to purchase the land. Land is available through an online auction. And so the auction gives people the opportunity to look at land, look at where it's going to be located, what type of access it may have, if there are any services available within a borough, so they might have road service, maintenance done to those areas. So it's really up to the purchaser to decide what type of land they want to use these vouchers for and what type of services to be provided.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair. So can you help guide me through the process of how an individual wanting to redeem this voucher, what they would do and how they would select their lands?
So through the chair, Representative Story, every year we put out an auction that begins in June. And basically the auction allows people to look on our website at all of the parcels that we have available through our subdivision sales. And they can go look at those lands throughout the summer, all across the state in different locations. If they can't visit them, then they can at least do some research. And then they would put in a bid, and they would, so there is a fair market value, step back a minute, there is a fair market value that is established through an appraisal. And there is a minimum bid these people would have to bid, and then they can up their bid to be the highest winner. So it gets awarded by the highest winner. And then in October, we open all of the bids online, and then we announce the winners. You can win up to two parcels as an individual, and then they would get into contract. They can go into contract with the state for, let's say, if the purchase price is $70,000, say, but they have some of these PSD vouchers, and they can deduct however much the PSD voucher is from the final price, and then they would be able to go into contract for the remaining amount if they want to get a contract with the state for up to 20 years, and then they would pay the state back over the 20-year period. And sometimes we have parcels that are less than that. It depends on the location. It depends on how valuable that land is.
And real quick, let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Rauscher. Sorry about that. I didn't see a sneak in. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Follow up?
Sure. One more question right now, and that is how many people usually show interest and bid on these lands?
To your Representative Story, that's a good question. I don't have that statistic in front of me, but I do know that every year we put out 200 parcels on our subdivision auction site. We also, to mention, we have this remote rec staking, and we have multiple staking areas where we might have the ability for 50 people to stake in an area, let's say. And then we also have over-the-counter parcels, where after a while, if a parcel does not get sold through the auction process, people could come in and purchase it directly over the counter and get it right then and there, and they don't have to have a bidding process. So I would say, you know, it varies. We usually sell about half the parcels in auction, so there's about 100 winners at that point, and then we have maybe another 30 that would do our remote rec staking program. But it does vary, and I don't have those exact numbers in front of me, but I could set you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. I have a question. Looking at, still looking at the bill, Mr. Fechter, that we have. One of the things that we brought up is the only way that somebody can collect, either they have to collect a full voucher or not get a voucher at all, unless you have some sort of garnishment. And then the garnishments can be paid, and then what's left over you can use for a voucher. And one of the issues that we had with that is it's, you know, for like, child support. If you owe child support payments, you end up getting the voucher. What's left, you say you only went, I think the scenario we had was like $4,600. If somebody wants 1,000 of that going towards land voucher, they'd be able to double that and get $2,000. And then only the remainder would be going to pay child support. So one way of getting around making child support payments is just using your full permit of fund dividend to get the land voucher, and then maybe accumulating those land vouchers and actually being able to sell it out on the market, maybe at a discount, maybe even more. Have we resolved that issue? Is there a workaround?
Chair Tuck, I'll just describe the way as I understand it working. So if you're an individual who has outstanding garnishments, your PFD would be garnishable up to the value of the cash PFD. So if it was a $1,000 cash PFD that was appropriated, that could be fully garnishable, and then you would receive the net. So if the statutory PFD is $3,000, implying a $6,000 land voucher, you would receive a land voucher that's worth $5,000 instead of $6,000, and that $1,000 would be sent off to satisfy the garnishment. And now the land voucher itself could also be garnishable, but that's a little bit problematic because, of course, what good is a land voucher to a custodial parent in your example that requires cash to support his or her children?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so I'll repeat back what I just make sure I understood. So actually, the garnishment comes first, and it was left over can go to a land voucher. But if somebody had other bills to pay other than something that's being garnished, they don't have that same opportunity to use part of the permanent fund dividend to catch up on bills and then still get a land voucher. Is that correct?
Chair Tuck, you captured it accurately.
And is there, in your mind, any way that we can help solve that so where a person doesn't have to use the full cash value of their permanent fund dividend? Is there some way that we can correct that through this committee quickly?
Chair Tuck, I think that would be up to this committee to make an amendment that said, for instance, that you could sort of mix and match, but it does become a little bit of complicated math with the garnishment piece and everything else.
But can you point us into the direction of somewhere in the bill, sections that we should be looking at, or where we, direct us to where we can focus in on that?
There is a garnishment section. I unfortunately don't have the bill in front of me.
Okay. All righty. Any further questions? Okay, I'm going to take a quick at ease. Okay, we're back on the record at 6:22, the Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs. We're going over House Bill 97 by the governor. Discussion right now is how can we amend this bill where a recipient of a dividend can use a portion of their dividend to get a voucher, a land voucher. And so Section 8 actually talks about the garnishment and then what's left over. But what limits, what in this bill limits someone from being able to only use a portion of their dividend for a land voucher?
Chair Tuck, earlier in the bill, if you'll bear with me to find the section, I believe it's section 3. Is it section 3? This may take me just a moment if the committee could bear with me to find the section.
I'm with you.
Section 5, apologies to the committee. This section goes into individuals electing to receive a state land voucher instead of a monetary dividend. I believe that could be amended to read similarly to the language that we have for other programs, such as the dividend raffle, where it would be in $100 increments up to the full amount of the dividend.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Fechter. And so if I read Section 5 correctly, this is any amount remaining as a result of individual elections. And when we say individual elections, we're talking about deductions to the Pick, Click, and Give program. Is that correct? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, there's a variety of elections, including Pick, Click, Give being the most famous, the dividend raffle, 529 plan through University of Alaska. So probably a couple others that aren't popping into my mind right now.
Okay, I'm going to take a quick brief at ease. The Special Committee in the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee will come to order. At this time, I'm going to hold on to this bill. I am going to move back to our previous resolution, House Joint Resolution 32, for consideration. Unfortunately, I have to leave at 6:30, but we are not going to adjourn. We will recess and come back to take up 97. And with that, if you don't mind, we will now go to House Joint Resolution 32. We had already taken public testimony on House Joint Resolution 32. We adopted an amendment that's in your bill packet. Or we actually, yeah. It's labeled HJR 32, amendment number A1. And to make things simple, I did have a new committee substitute that was drafted that includes Amendment A1 on your desk. You should have that committee substitute. It should be committee substitute for HR 32 version B. And before we can take action on this resolution, we do need to have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt committee substitute 32-LS1381/B as the working document for HJR 32.
Any objection? Not hearing objection. Committee substitute for HJR 32 version B is now our working document. Representative Nelson is our sponsor of the resolution. Can you give us a brief overview of the resolution just one more time?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Tuck and members of the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee. For the record, I am Representative David Nelson for House District 15 in Anchorage. HJR 32 encourages the United States Congress to introduce and pass legislation requiring each offeror for a domestic United States Department of Defense contract construction project to establish goals that no less than 10% of the total workforce employed in performance of a project are veterans in a qualified apprenticeship or post-secondary program. HJR 32 would also require each contractor and subcontractor for a domestic United States Department of Defense project that employs apprentices or post-secondary students are veterans of the Armed Forces of the United States. And that's a brief summary of the resolution.
Thank you very much, Representative Nelson. Any questions or comments? I have actually a comment. It's really rare that we get a resolution that's well-crafted. We only have to have a small little amendment. I mean, you'd be amazed how much resolutions just get exercised and exercised and exercised. So I just want to compliment you and say job well done. Well done on that. The only thing that I may have suggested was just including the Department of Defense, the procurement officer with, but that's you know, not necessary. Any other further comments?
I have one.
Oh, Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. To the chair, line 13, page 2, line 14, it goes into Department of Defense indicates that $10,900,000,000 we spent military construction that will require thousands of workers. So I'm trying to understand, do we have any idea what percentage or what amount will be in Alaska?
I'm sorry, on page 2, line 13, talking about the
line 14.
That's actually a really good question. I'll give Representative Nelson a stab at it, and I can give you my rough estimate. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Tuck, and through the chair to Representative Rauscher. The $10.9 billion for military construction was part of the appropriation for fiscal year 2022 on military construction. I don't think they released in-depth numbers of how much specifically is going to DoD projects in Alaska, just because I believe that would be a possible security risk. But if the chair knows more, then I can bring it back over to you.
Thank you. And Representative Rauscher, I've heard from 100 to 200 million maybe coming to Alaska.
100 million?
100 to 200 million. Between. It's still up in the air, but there is going to be a significant amount of money coming up.
Follow up. To the chair, could we, I don't care, we'll pass it out before we get the number, but could the number be made available before it hits the next committee?
Representative Rauscher, those were estimates,
yeah.
And I can try to get the source of those estimates. Yeah, I think Alaska General Contractor, I'm sorry, Associated General Contractors has that number, and I'll try to get it from them.
Okay, thank you.
One other thing I want to point out is this is not specific to Alaska. It'd be nice to know those numbers, but it's not specific to Alaska. This is nationwide. This is a resolution.
I have that feeling, which is why.
Yeah, and so any further comments? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment. I had received a few emails from folks who were supportive of this resolution, and they were hoping to see it get moved through the committee. I don't know that they'll be watching today, but I hope they are, so that we see they take action. But what I had shared in some of my responses to those supporters was just that, you know, this piece of this effort is a resolution, and I hope we'll, you know, learn more if there are other legislative things sort of policy related. I know we're asking on the Congress to make policy, but if there's something we can think about, you know, right now there's such a labor need, labor demand, and certainly so many of our veterans have amazing skills that could be put to work in the private sector. So anyhow, hope so some good connections and opportunities come from this focus on this. And I hope that the folks that have been watching this and waiting to see some action are tuned in and excited to see it moving along. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to add that we have the Helmets to Hard Hats program that we really try to recruit those leaving the military service into apprenticeship programs. And I served on the Alaska Electrical Apprenticeship Board for over 15 years doing interviews. And they are some of the best applicants that we've had. I've bragged about those applicants and those apprentices through other bills that we've have passed through this committee prior years. And it's unfortunate that we have to have a resolution like this to try to get legislation, because with all the efforts that we have, I don't know why more military people aren't applying for apprenticeships. We do our best to try to get them in and get them to apply, because we want to see them succeed, and they make us succeed when they do. And so, any further questions or comments? What is the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we move HJR 32, that's 32/LS1381/B, out of committee with individual recommendations, I believe attach zero fiscal note, and allow Ledge Legal to make any conforming changes that are necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the committee will be recessed to the call of the chair. Good evening. I would like to call the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs to order. It is back to order. Thank you. It's we were on a little bit of a recess. It's Monday, May 16th. The time is 7:19. We were taking up House Bill 97, and we had talked about conceptual amendment allowing those who would like to take advantage of the land vouchers when they get to receive their permanent fund dividend to be able to do so, or when they do their application to receive the permanent fund dividend, be able to elect to do vouchers and also be able to still receive a portion of their dividend if they have no garnishments taking place. We have a conceptual amendment in front of us, which I don't plan on moving. It does address what we're hoping to do, but it hasn't been drafted by Ledge Legal, but I don't want to hold this up. And if we were to adopt this conceptual amendment, it will take time to get that out of Ledge Legal into the next committee. So we'll just let it go along with the next committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
We need to move amendment number one, A.1.
And then before that, we have amendment number one. And
Mr. Chair, I'll move amendment A.1.
We have amendment A.1. I'll object just to be able to explain it real quick. Representative Clayman?
Just changes the effective date from 22 to 23 because we're already past 22.
Okay, thank you, Representative Clayman. I remove my objection. Any further objections? Hearing no objections, amendment number one, version 8.1, has been adopted. And yes, Representative Clayman.
And then, Mr. Chair, what I would actually ask is rather than move conceptual amendment number one, I would actually move, I would call it a recommendation. That a formal recommendation of the committee that the next committee adopt conceptual amendment number one. That would be my motion as a formal recommendation from this committee.
Thank you. I like that recommendation. Is there any objections to that recommendation? Hearing and seeing no objections to that recommendation, that recommendation will go along with the bill. Any further comments on the bill? And if I may ask, what is the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that the committee move House Bill 97, Work Order 32-GH1612 / A as amended with included specific committee recommendation and any fiscal notes. And allow Ledge Legal to make any conforming changes they need.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. Any objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, the House Bill 97 will be moved with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. That concludes the business that we have before the committee for us. That's all that we're going to be taking up for this year. And then during this 32nd Alaska Legislature, I want to thank the committee members for their participation and doing some good work here. I know this is a special committee, so sometimes the big substantial stuff doesn't happen so much, but still a lot of important issues do make it through. So I really appreciate that. Okay, so with that, if there's no further business before the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, I'd like to thank Melissa Lowe for filling in at the last second. And I want to thank you guys all for being here late this night. And so the meeting is adjourned at 7:18.